The one in the other place. She tells me, "Thank you, darling. Thank you for coming. Thank God for letting you come. Sometimes I am so angry at him. Dear God, what have I done to deserve this stroke, to live in this place? But what can you do about the guy? He does anything he wants, and you can't take a breath without him." I like her in this place. I mean, I don't like that she has to be here in this critical care home, but it beats Bellevue, it beats a state asylum, and I like how she is. She needs me. She treats me good here. Only a little scrap now and then in this place. How often do you get to change a family thing that's driving you nuts, no pun intended, to something better?
I'm getting closer and closer to 100. Yes.
Is your teeth bleed down?
Don't ask me to put them on now.
You really don't want them?
No, I don't.
Okay.
Cups and saucers. "This is what you brought to talk about?" she asks, clearly annoyed. I ignore her and continue. "Can you see the flying saucer in this picture? Are your eyes still good enough to see it?" She is straining, then laughs and asks, "Where's the cup?" I show her more unidentified flying objects. "Am I supposed to remember these?" she toothlessly asks, still laughing. "I can only remember the saucer." "You don't have to remember a thing. Dr. Freema told us we should try and engage our intellectual powers, Lita. I thought you might enjoy this book, Folk Concepts of Outer Space. It's fascinating to me."
"I don't understand any of it."
"It's as simple as this. Some people think there are lives on other planets that visit us on Earth."
"That's very advanced intellectual talk. I can't understand a thing you're saying."
"There's not a lot to understand. Some people have organized to worship someone they call God. Others have organized to worship outer space, and they think they had past lives on other planets."
"What?"
"Past lives."
"What's that?"
I stare at her, trying to figure how to explain to my Catholic grandmother, who is clearly completely lost talking about UFOs, what a past life is. I can't think of any analogy, any metaphor. I can't think of anything that will bridge the gap between Catholic worship and past lives. Saints, visions, miracles, but past lives? I don't think the Vatican's ever addressed the issue. I return to pointing out UFO and spaceship pictures. "Look, there's Mother Teresa at a UFO landing pad in Canada. You know her, don't you? The Catholic saint who's devoted her whole life to working with lepers in India?"
"She devoted her entire life to working with animals?" she asked with equal amounts of disdain and incredulousness.
"No, not leopards, the black cats. Talking with Lita can be like visiting another planet. Lepers, the people dying with leprosy. The ones who are quarantined in special colonies. The ones no one will go near but Mother Teresa."
"No, I don't know this Mother Teresa. And what's she doing with a spaceship? I can't understand a thing."
"Lita, it's not real hard to understand. But I have to remember this woman came into the world riding a donkey, not even a horse, on a farm in a foreign country, using an outhouse and wearing bloomers. Her lifetime is the whole of the 20th century. In her years, she has seen the tractor, water running through faucets, the car, the airplane, radio, television, the washing machine. She's washed everything by hand for as long as I can remember. She has seen jets and rockets and astronauts walking on the moon. Maybe this is where the buck stops. Maybe spaceships and aliens truly are beyond her comprehension. And maybe she is confused by U.S. immigration calling people aliens who come to this country from another. I try to imagine what I will not be able to comprehend at age 88, 89, 90, in the year 2040. The date is even hard to comprehend. I tell Lita, reading these people's stories might help it make sense.
You may think reading is a good exercise in gaining understanding, but what's the point of reading if I can't remember what I've read?
Her usual bullseye shot to my heart, but I am trying the practical approach lately. You have a hard time remembering anything these days, Lita, so maybe you should entertain the notion that reading is pleasurable just for the freaking moment.
What a great idea, darling!
Thank heaven she goes for it. We leap through the pages reading about different kinds of UFOs, her favorites being all the ones that are saucer and cup-shaped. I like that she's made these UFOs into saucer and cup shapes. For both of us, our favorite 20th century pastime, coffee and a breakfast joint.
Beautiful. Yes. Beautiful.
Latina cultura. I race into the hospital to Lita's ward a tad late. She is hanging with her ladies. They are all staring into space in an after-dinner thrill, looking like they are not listening to the blaring TV, which I now know better than to turn off. Meals are always a high around here, maybe anywhere now that I think about it. The lull isn't heavy yet. 3 hours after dinner, with most of them in the same spot, staring into space, waiting to be put to bed, the lull gets really heavy. The feel of the waiting is almost more than I can endure just walking into the room. And yet, endure they do for as long as it takes. Right now, however, the lull is light. They are still basking in an after-dinner thrill. I grab Maria's chair, swing it out from the dinner table, and exclaim, Lita, Latina Cultura Club!
Oh, mi Dios, este es tú?
I don't wait to go through the ritual of letting it sink in that, yes, it is her granddaughter. Tonight, I am in a rush.
I asked the nurses to call you today and was just thinking you wouldn't be coming, but look, oh, dear God, an angel has been sent to me.
Like a broken record, the same exact words every time. But every time it is fresh. It is passionate and full of meaning. There is absolutely no doubt in my mind that these words are sincere. That from the bottom of her heart, she is thanking God that he sent an angel to her. Her good arm and hand waving the air, trying to grab hold to touch me, expressing the gratitude she is overwhelmed with at this moment. But I am not stopping for the ritual tonight. I grab her hand from behind for only a second. I am rushing to Latin culture. Whisking her down the hall, weaving in and out of others in their chairs, calling hi to all the ones I know, while Maria is praising angels being sent to her. There's something about needing to break up this visiting routine, about needing to feel a purpose. Life has meaning with a purpose. We attend this Latin club to play dominoes, to play checkers, to snap our fingers to some merengues, because it means we have something to do, a reason to be, an illusion of going somewhere.
How long have you known you had AIDS?
2 years, 1987. It was officially diagnosed in February of 1988, but the way I was feeling, I knew it. And believe me, you gotta believe in God. To survive, my main objection is to believe in God and to thank God for every time he does something for me. and I love God more than anything else in the world. I've learned to love him.
Theo didn't smoke. Theo, he's one of the sweet young men. Some of them are angry, some are jerks. Some deal what I assume is a lot of drugs in this place. One of the dealers knifed a nurse last summer. Some are funny and mischievous, some really are loony, and a lot of them lie. I like to think they're creative. I conjure up details to the tales they tell, elaborate details. Like when Bill was going on about his 6 properties scattered across the states, we made one a medieval castle with a moat and lots of dogs, but none mean. Dogs you'd love to run and roll with. Frolic is the word that comes to mind. Frolic is like a medieval castle word to me. I like it when words reflect a mood, an historic period. Frolic conjures a whole thing around it, not just someone playing merrily. Frolic is what most of the sweet young men do not do around here, so they conjure it. They frolic in their minds, like Theo. He's getting out today, as soon as his aunt arrives. She's looking for an apartment as we speak, he tells me. Anywhere, he's not particular. She's looking in Queens. Today he's leaving. Maybe tomorrow, but no later than that. And he's almost better. His skin is flaking and he's splotching red, but he's almost better. He is walking today. He is pushing the wheelchair instead of someone pushing him. Just a matter of days and he'll be cool. He doesn't look cool. He breaks into hot sweats that stop him eating mid-meal, which is mostly all he eats. Mid-meal is about his best shot. And he's forever saying my grandmother, Maria, is an inspiration, that she's lived 90 years. He's forever saying he's going to live that long with Maria as his inspiration. Theo teases her incessantly. She does some stuff worthy of teasing. At the Goldwater barbecue, she went topless. When he told me, I could not grasp what he was saying. I made him tell me 3 times. Apparently, it was also beyond Maria's comprehension, or beyond her memory, because her comment on the affair was, "How could you listen to someone as ugly as that man?" There are moments I think she has a selective memory. 3 other patients verified the tale, so this time I don't think Theo was embellishing reality. They also saw Maria's blouse come off by the chicken grill. I was still having a hard time grasping. She's so dignified and has such an attitude. She sat looking down her arrogant and what she assumes to be patrician nose, reprimanding me about taking that ugly man's word over hers. I kept looking real hard at her 96 pounds of Catholic modesty, trying to understand the depth of her fury. It's like when she calls someone toilet. The way she says it makes you one. Toilet is one of those words that can do some heavy conjuring. Far worse than a 4-letter word or a picture of some naked queers together. Helms and his congressional boys can't ever censor the kind of obscenity that can stir a shriveled old woman to rage, serious enough to spew out, "toilet," so you recoil from the heat, or can stir a woman to a primal rage great enough to get her flashing her 90-year-old breasts in public. Sweet Theo bypassed the rage and teased her mercilessly for days about going topless to the Goldwater barbecue. Theo is not a medieval word, like frolic and castles. Theo conjures up service. I think of Theodore Roosevelt, his cousin Franklin, and Eleanor Roosevelt, in service to all the people, especially the poor people of the United States. Theo looks after all those he considers less fortunate in Goldwater. He always makes me give someone half his sandwich. As I said, his best shot is mid-meal. Most people wrap their food and eat it later. Theo always gives his away. What I don't tell him is that no one will touch his halves. "Don't give me no AIDS sandwich, I won't have it," they say emphatically. "He didn't even touch it," I tell one after the other. Normally they'd kill for a ham and cheese on rye. You cannot get AIDS from a sandwich, I continue, and I got it from the counterman myself. Theo didn't touch this half, playing into their stupid game. No way I'm eating no AIDS sandwich, they retort. I can't tell Theo. I pretend to give it to someone behind him, where he can't see that no one will take it. It would break his heart. It would send him to church so quick you'd miss him flying by in his chair. The chapel is one of his favorite spots. He's a deeply religious man. I'd bet donuts to dollars he was a deeply religious man before he got AIDS, though I know AIDS can bring on the religion in people, whether you have the virus or not. So I conjure up tales with Theo, this sweet young man, always with a smile. If I'm feeling blue, running into Theo picks up my spirit right away. We conjure his spot together and decorate. We add a cat, a Persian, one of those lavender long hairs. He's always wanted one. We put plants on all the windowsills. He's getting out of here. He's permanently in his wheelchair lately because his feet and hands have bloated to twice their size and he's eating even less. But he's getting out of here. He's living to 90 years. Just you wait. One day, visiting Goldwater, I can't find Theo. I can't find him this one day. I ask around, and nobody is sure whether it was a suicide or a cigarette gone awry, but they say he burned up in his bed just last night. This is the second patient on fire in the last year, so now they say the state wants to outlaw smoking. Take out the cigarette machines, no smoking areas, nothing. They are going on and on about the state, smoking being a civil right the state is trying to take away. I'm drifting someplace else. They are talking in my face, but I can't hear them anymore. I'm with Theo in his new spot, plants at every window, a lavender cat on his lap. And like a broken record, my brain keeps scratching out, Theo didn't smoke. Dance and coo. You know, when you can twist and twirl and fly yourself across a room, it's called dance, and no one looks at you funny. They admire and coo. But when it's in your body all the time, when it's uncontrollable, when you're doing two different syncopated rhythms simultaneously, shaking to a beat no one else hears the music too, while peeing on the floor, they don't call it avant-garde. They call it epilepsy, or cerebral palsy, or drugged out, and they put you in institutions where no one admires and coos. Heart grab. Every single time I'm here, something grabs my heart. Something just comes right up and squeezes it till I feel like my heart is gonna burst. Tonight it is one from the Mutt and Jeff team, the one who lays permanently stomach to bed and head twisted left, whose feet wrap up behind him and whose wrists are perpetually turned toward heaven. So he's looking like a yogi in one of those positions, like the 15th position. I know you know what I mean. And he's looking like an angel. I mean, imagine if you were in some position inspired to bring about enlightenment, frozen for years in this space they say is good for you, in this way that it's really hard to have any addictions even if you want them. You can't smoke unless someone else does it for you. You can't shoot dope unless someone gets you needles and sticks you too. You can't eat candy and ice cream unless someone gets it, then takes the time to get it into your mouth. I mean, imagine how freaking angel like you would look. So here I am before this man, the only one who can get near the cats, the only one the cats get near, 20-odd wildcats roam the place, and they get near no one but this angel-like man in a permanent yoga position. They nap on this angel's back. Here I am before this man who rears his frozen and yoga-positioned body up, chest up like a rattler, swiftly gaining presence just for a second. That's as long as the 15th position will allow. Drawing himself skyward toward those angels, twisted neck and all, taking me by surprise, he announces in a marbled yet very clear speech, "I'm no moron!" And that was it. That was the thing that night that came up and grabbed my heart. This angel, this man with the frozen and yoga position body. Leet and I have been seeing him for well over a year, calling him Mutt and the other one that is with him 90% of the time, the one that has previously done all the talking, Jeff. For well over a year, three times a week, we've been passing them outside the canteen, always looking like they're huddled over an illegal game of cards or craps. And I've said something like, "Lita, here we are passing the Mutt and Jeff boys looking pretty dapper, you two," which they do. The one I thought talked for him, also on a flatbed, the handsome, cigar-smoking, fast-talking, wheeler-dealer kind of guy in the home, always yells something after us like, "Looking pretty smart yourself, ladies," as I'm tooling by with Lita in the chair. So all this time I thought the man with the frozen and yoga position body couldn't talk. The words stop me in my tracks. Not only that he's talking for the first, but what he says. "No moron!" Just like that, this man shot right up and grabbed my heart. He's squeezing it so it feels like it's gonna burst. It's not that I ever even thought he was a moron. It's something about wondering for the last year what he thought about all day. But it's stupidly never occurring to me to ask. Everything for the moment is this angel-faced man, the one whose back the cats nap on, the one who keeps kitty treats under his high-top bed, the one who's got me wondering how he feeds those kitty treats to the wild ones around him. He's perpetually on his stomach, neck permanently twisted with that frozen and yoga position body. Everything is this man with the bluest eyes, the boyish-looking face, this man with the smallest, pinkest, and gentlest-looking, most feminine-looking hands and feet you'd ever want to see. And there's no way you can't see them. They're twisted up in your face. Now he's asking, "How old is my grandmother?" Lita tells him, proudly, pulling herself up straight, 90 years! And you? 67! Again, I'm startled. "You're looking pretty hot for 67, I say, making small talk, anything to calm my squeezed-up heart, my tearing eyes. Curbing my impulse to drop right there, knees to ground, hands in prayer position to beg whoever the heck is in the other place that we're not. Please give this man my body, my athletic legs, my muscular arms, my uncommonly large and definitely not feminine hands, my paws. Let this angel into my body for just one night. Let him know my movement and let me know his. Please, you who are supposed to be more powerful in the other place. So many people in this condition and so many more that look after them. What I'm asking is beyond the rights of disabled peoples. I don't have a problem with the rights of differently abled peoples. I'm talking beyond the argument that we're all handicapped somehow. I'm talking this angel's life is about being permanently frozen in this yoga position body, about living in this special care unit with 24-hour duty, about other people feeding him, wheeling him, changing his diapers, a 67-year-old man relegated to diapers, about even someone else feeding the cats he obviously adores. You, in the other place that many of us look to, what the heck are these other bodies all about? Curbing my impulse to be a fool, I know I'll get no answer. I'm not feeling pity or sorrow or grief or even anger. Just confusion, wanting to know why. And just wanting to give this angel something to make his day. He shoots upright again for another moment like grease leaping in a too-hot pan, and he says in that marbled speech, "I want to take your grandmother to bed!" You what? I can't believe my ears. To bed! I want to take your grandmother to bed! At which point I burst out laughing. Here is yet another man wanting to get a little without bothering to know the woman. Every time I get soft in my heart over one of these guys, they bring me right back down. I am laughing, Lita is laughing, he is grinning from ear to ear, those blue eyes twinkling in that head with permanently twisted neck, looking up at Lita and I. I'm serious, he says. Great, I say. I'll book next Saturday at the Plaza Hotel. Arrange an ambulette for travel. You two can have a ball. Literally. We are all laughing hysterically. These are the moments I love in this place. Thank the one who is in the place that we are not, that there are a few moments that I can love in this place. And maybe this is the first in my life that I love a sexist remark. And finally, my squeezed up, grabbed up heart is back in my chest.
I don't like to be a great grandmother.
Why?
I can't think. My mind is at a standstill. It doesn't function as it used to. That's the trouble with a great grandmother. That's the trouble with 100 years. With 100 years, you see, you have too much to remember when it comes to 100 years, and you can't remember it all. Now, let's all take a nap.